It's September 20, 2012. I'm Paul Joseph Watson. This is InfoWars Nightly News, and here's a look at what's coming up on the show.
Tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, DHS enlists citizen spies to snitch with smartphones. Then, Eric Holder plays crossing guard as Fast and Furious runs over the Fall Guy. Plus, GMO creates mutant mice in France. All that and Secrets of Dread Leaked, coming up on the InfoWars Nightly News.
Top story tonight, DHS enlists citizen spies via new smartphone app. This is InfoWars.com. Homeland Security officials in Delaware are hoping to enlist citizens as spies for the state by encouraging them to use a new app, which allows smartphone users to attach pictures of suspicious vehicles or persons and send them directly to the federal government. The Delaware Information and Analysis Center, DIAC, now offers a mobile app to report suspicious activities in real time by attaching a photo, sending location information, or entering details about suspicious vehicles or persons. In addition, users can choose to make their report anonymously or can include contact information for follow-up by law enforcement. This is out of dailyfinance.com. So I find it quite ironic that authorities across the United States are simultaneously claiming that taking photographs in public is a potential indication of terrorism, meanwhile trying to encourage the citizens to do exactly that in the name of reporting terrorism as part of this suspicious activity snitch program. And the comments actually on this InfoWars.com article are really worth a read, because the people there are actually advocating that we get involved in this and we take pictures of things like the White House or a Monsanto processing facility, because, you know, the government wants us to report to them the terrorists, so let's go ahead and report the terrorists. But we've got all this information being collated in these so-called fusion centers, which of course are littered across the country, which the FBI has basically given carte blanche to do what they like with whatever information they collect. Because according to a 2008 FBI memorandum, Congress cannot investigate these federal fusion centers without the FBI's permission. And in addition, the employees of those fusion centers who may use the information to harass, you know, surveil innocent people for completely asinine reasons, they're also immune from taking responsibility for their actions under the same FBI memorandum. Now, it's a fact that the state enlisting citizens to spy on each other is a hallmark of an authoritarian society. And while it's all done in the name of safety and security, history, of course, tells us that it does nothing to increase safety, and it only breeds distrust and resentment amongst the population. And in fact, in this article, I link to the study done by Robert Gellately of Florida State University, and he looked at the citizen snitch programs back in Nazi Germany, and he found that almost exclusively the people snitched on each other, not out of genuine concerns for security, but for purely selfish reasons. You know, to create trouble for a neighbor, to denigrate the reputation of a business rival, or simply to, you know, get some satisfaction out of a Pavlovian need to be rewarded by an authority figure. This is what he found during his study of citizen snitch programs throughout history. So it's got nothing to do with safety or security. It's about justifying the bloated budgets of these federal fusion centers by hyping the myth that dangerous terrorists are lurking around every corner, and that we all need to be the eyes and ears of the state to report on them. When in reality, as the figures show, you're more likely to die from a bee sting than in an actual terrorist attack. You know, you're more likely to die drowning in a bath or in an accident involving hitting a deer. All these things individually, drowning in a swimming pool, more likely to kill you than a terrorist attack. So it's about hyping that myth that terrorists are everywhere, they're going to get you. Secondly, it's about creating this chilling effect that prevents people from exercising their freedoms under the fear that their behavior, you know, could be misinterpreted by the local citizen snitch as suspicious. So if you want to live in a society where every neighbourhood has its local tattletale who reports spurious, suspicious behaviour to the authorities, then go and live in North Korea. This is anti-American down to its very core. And as an indication of just what type of suspicious behaviour is actually going to be tracked by these kind of programmes, we move on to our next story. DOJ-funded training manual lists bumper stickers as terrorism. A leaked training manual used in the state and local anti-terrorism training SLAT program for law enforcement and funded by the Department of Justice lists political bumper stickers expressing opposition to the United Nations and support for the Bill of Rights as indications of terrorist activity. You heard it right. The presentation documents, which were leaked to the public intelligence website, are entitled Terrorism Training for Law Enforcement and are marked Law Enforcement Sensitive. And this program is funded by a grant from the Department of Justice Bureau of Justice Assistance. So it's a DOJ-funded program. Slides for the presentation depict the kind of behavior that law enforcement officials should be wary of in spotting potential terrorists during highway patrols. And if you click on this article on Infowars.com, you can see some of the slides that are included in this presentation. And it's what the DOJ classifies as terrorist activity. This is what they're telling the police is suspicious, potentially terrorist activity. And we'll get to the bumper stickers in a minute, but my favourite has got to be this. There's a slide in here, and bearing in mind, you know, I've written articles about this for going on 10 years, where everything from having an argument with your wife or wearing blue jeans is a potential sign of extremist activity. But in here, they've got a slide under the title of Special Interest Single Issue Terrorism, which characterizes people who hold views that, quote, represent a fairly popular point of view. Those are the people they're characterizing as terrorists in this presentation. People who hold opinions that represent, quote, a fairly popular point of view. So let's see, you know, maybe if you think taxes are too high, that's a fairly popular view, you're a terrorist. Maybe you think illegal immigration's out of control, you're a terrorist. Maybe you think, you know, police brutality's out of control, again, you're a terrorist. Hold a fairly popular view, according to the DOJ, and you are a terrorist, according to this training manual being given, being presented to law enforcement officials. So this is what cops are being told to look out for. This is how you hunt down terrorists, by finding people with political views that are shared by a majority of people. Which of course means the majority of US citizens. It's almost everybody. And then you've got the bumper stickers, which are also characterized as signs of potential terrorism, things that cops should look into, investigate, search the vehicle and so forth. And what do these bumper stickers say? Get the US out of the UN. So if you don't like the United Nations, you're probably a terrorist, according to the federal government. Another one, know your rights or lose them. If you've got that bumper sticker on your vehicle, if you support the Bill of Rights and aren't afraid to say it, you're a terrorist, I'm sorry. Oppose GMO food. They've got a whole section about people who oppose Monsanto. They're terrorists. Oppose abortion. You're a terrorist as well. And in this manual, they actually teach cops they're dealing with, quote, a new kind of enemy that, quote, doesn't act like a criminal, doesn't behave like a criminal, doesn't respond like a criminal. So that's basically every law-abiding American in the country. You're the new kind of enemy. And again, it illustrates what we've been talking about for years, which is the apparatus of the whole war on terror has been shifted away from Muslim extremists to so-called domestic terrorists. It's been realigned. And this is what they characterize as domestic terrorism. Political bumper stickers holding a view that's fairly popular. And of course, it's par for the course. Remember, we had the DHS-funded terror study earlier this year, which revealed that, quote, liberty lovers are likely terrorists, you know, people suspicious of authority. We had the FBI flyers handed out to businesses. People who pay for a cup of coffee with cash, probably terrorists, according to the FBI. So, you know, combining all this, God forbid if you were to park up a Starbucks with a bumper sticker on your car and then go and buy a cup of coffee using cash. I mean, that would be total freak-out time, basically be a national security incident, because all these banal, ridiculously normal activities that everybody engages in, and any kind of distrust of authority or any political speech, even if it's shared by a majority of people, is being designated as terrorism as the American people become the new enemy of the federal government as the federal government arms itself to the teeth. And speaking of liberty and security, I'm going to go to Dan Bedondi, who's out on the streets of Austin asking people if they're willing to sacrifice liberty for security. Let's go to that report.
Dan Bedondi reporting for Infowars.com. We're live at Austin International Airport, and we're asked a series of questions today, and one in particular: would you give up your liberties so the government could protect us against terrorists? How do you feel about giving up your liberties so the government could protect us against terrorism?
Well, I don't think it's a question of a trade-off between liberties and terrorism. I think just living in the age that we do, where there is a real likelihood or potential likelihood of threats, that there have to be certain precautions that are taken for everyone's good. I think the problem is, like with the Patriot Act, if it goes too far. So the question is where you draw the line.
I feel like it's probably the right thing to do. I mean,
TSA, with this increased security now, does that make you feel safer traveling?
No.
Yes, if anything, just to make sure that we can safely travel in the United States.
How does that make you feel to know that the U.S. government put this underwear bomber on a plane?
Well, you know, I'm a lawyer, admittedly, so I'm going to need facts to establish that. And I just, to me, it sounds like speculation. So until I see actual facts, I won't consider it to be a true statement.
I'm Kurt Haskell. I'm an attorney in Michigan. And, you know, I was on the flight with the underwear bomber on Christmas Day while we were waiting for our flight. So we sat by the gate on the floor playing cards. And when we were playing cards, I looked up, and what caught my eye was a pair of men walking up to the counter. And one looked like a wealthier Indian man to me, and the other looked like a poor African. I thought he was a teenager, but apparently he was a little older then. He looked like a poor African teenager. He only had on jeans and a white T-shirt in the middle of winter. And, you know, I thought they were an odd pair, so I just kind of watched them as we were playing cards. And they went to the counter together, and the Indian-looking man spoke, and what he said was, "This man needs to get on the flight," referring to the African teenager. But he doesn't have a passport. And then the girl working at the counter said, "Well, you have to have a passport to get on the flight." And then the Indian man said, "Well, he's from Sudan. We do this all the time." And that's an exact word-for-word quote. And she said something along the lines of, "Well, you know, I'll have to refer you to a manager," or something like that. And I think she did something on her computer. And then she sent the two of them down a hallway, and they walked down the hallway together, which was in a restricted area. And they walked down there without an escort, and then, you know, I quit watching at that point. Two important things at the end of January 2010. One was an ABC News article by Brian Ross, where he came out and said, "Yeah, you know, this man in tan suit that was witnessed by passengers," he said passengers, but really it was just me, that, you know, "we're looking into this guy, and we think he actually helped the underwear bomber so that he wouldn't get cold feet." You know, they didn't go so far as to admit what I had been saying, that, you know, that would have been impossible that he was Al-Qaeda, because he went to the desk and said, "We do this all the time." And then he had enough authority to walk down this hallway in a secure area and talk to the manager and get the man on the flight. So obviously Al-Qaeda couldn't do that, but they did admit the existence of the man in this article. So to me, that was a big story, because it was not only the first time they admitted his existence, but they've never admitted his existence after that. But at least we have it once detailed. Not only that, but it's by ABC News, so fairly credible media, at least, you know, to some. But later in January 2010, we had hearings in Congress on this, where we had Undersecretary of State Patrick Kennedy come out, and if you watch the video of him, it's pretty telling that he's trying to cover up something and not tell the truth. He's squirming in his chair and seems really uncomfortable answering the questions. And this video is all over the internet if you want to Google it and look at it. But what he said is basically, you know, we knew Abdul-Muttalib was a terrorist. We wanted to stop him from coming in the country and revoke his visa.
There have been numerous cases where our unilateral and uncoordinated revocation of a visa would have disrupted important investigations that were underway by one of our national security partners. They have the individual under investigation, and our revocation action would have disclosed U.S. government's interest in that individual and ended our colleagues' ability, such as the FBI, to pursue the case quietly and to identify terrorist plans and co-conspirators.
But we had a request.
Okay, research our lawyer, Kurt Haskell, and also Infowars.com. We interviewed him several times.
Right.
And
but there are lots of conspiracy theorists out there, lots of information that's totally incorrect, and so that may be very incorrect.
I mean, what if you did the research and you come to find out this is true, which is on record? Now, if you found out this is true, how would you feel at that point?
Well, it's a hypothetical question. You're asking a lawyer, so he's not going to answer a hypothetical question. Again, it's a trade-off in terms of fundamental rights and also things you need to do to protect yourself in a very frightening age.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Well, luckily they were able to catch him before he could do any damage. And, everybody makes mistakes. Just hope that nobody gets hurt in the process.
You also realize that these naked body scanners, they, even though they say they don't store, record, transmit it, right in the AIT training manual, it says we record, store, and transmit your images for training purposes only. And your naked image, when you walk through that scanner, your naked image is going to be broadcasted through the TSA network.
I didn't realize that.
They give off 30 times more radiation than a hospital CAT scan.
I didn't know that. I didn't realize that either. I guess I'll be reading up more on it.
You realize you have the option to opt out, right?
No. Do you?
Yeah, when you go up to... Yeah, you tell them, say, I'm going to opt out. And what they do is they pull you aside and they just give you a pat down. Which is better because, when you've been x-rayed in the hospital before?
Yes, but they cover you up here.
Yeah, with a lead vest, right? And the woman stands behind, the nurse stands behind the lead wall. Now, over here, as you see, now this is on record. Hundreds of TSA agents have cancer now from working around these machines 8 hours a day. You could Google this at home. It's on record.
Okay. So we can opt out.
And, when you go up there, tell them you want to opt out, and they'll pull you aside and give you a pat down.
Okay.
It's a little bit intrusive, but still better than getting radiated.
Okay.
In a statement, quote made by Benjamin Franklin, he said, anyone who would give up their essential liberties for security will get neither or deserve neither. Now, how do you feel about that statement?
Still, I feel like you need to be protected.
Well, I think that might be taken out of context, because what Franklin was referencing was giving up enable rights. This is not a right. This is a privilege to travel across the country.
Now, does that pertain to what's going on today with the Patriot Act, the National Defense Authorization Act?
Yes.
I agree with that. But again, it's a question of degree. And there are certain things that have to be done to protect the security of everyone. The question is, you can't violate fundamental rights set forth in the Bill of Rights.
They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Now ask yourself, is your liberty worth sacrificing for this unconstitutional security? Dan Bedondi for the InfoWars Nightly News.
France launches major investigation into GMOs following tumor study. This is Anthony Gucciardi out of NaturalSociety.com. Following the release of a peer-reviewed piece of research linking the consumption of Monsanto's Roundup containing GMO crops to tumors and organ damage, the French government is now calling for a health agency investigation, seeking to analyze the research and potentially ask European authorities to protect human health and abandon the use of GMO crops. France's agriculture minister and others are now sounding the alarm. And the interesting thing, of course, we've been covering this study for the past couple of days, is the fact that it's the first of its kind to monitor the effect of GMO crops on rats throughout the whole lifespan of the rats. So it took 4 months in this study for the tumors and the cancers to be noted to appear in the rats, which is interesting because all the previous studies that Monsanto has pointed to as evidence that GMO was safe only monitored the effect of these same crops on rats up to 90 days. So the very first study that goes beyond that 90-day period, which Monsanto kept pointing towards saying it's safe, is the first study to give us damning evidence of the fact that genetically engineered food kills. And it's evidence that eviscerates all these claims by Monsanto that it's supposedly safe, because they were all based on the previous 90-day rule, whereas this goes beyond it, and beyond that 90-day point is when the tumours appeared in the rats. So now France is launching this new investigation. Of course, they just decided to maintain the ban on a different type of Monsanto GMO maize. And basically, Monsanto's getting its butt kicked all over Europe. It's being strangled out of the European marketplace. And it's a massive victory for health freedom. The problem is that Monsanto's so dominant in America, thanks in part to the Obama administration, who made sure that all the former Monsanto executives got cushy, influential posts within the FDA. But the problem is that the GMO feed is still being exported from America to Europe and other countries around the world. It's being eaten by the livestock and then obviously passed on to humans. So that's why Prop 37, which we've covered before on InfoWars Nightly News, in California is more important than ever. This, of course, is the effort to force GMO companies, notably Monsanto, to label GMO food. And it really represents a pretty huge nail in the coffin of Monsanto's business model going forward. If this gets passed, then basically it could be the start of them going out of business. Because once people know about the trash that's in their food, then they're going to stop buying it eventually. So again, it's positive news on the health front, and we really need to celebrate these victories when they do happen. Of course, in Europe also, earlier this week, we had naked X-ray body scanners being banned throughout Europe as dangerous to health. That was a major victory. And now Monsanto, also in Europe, is very much on the ropes, and we're winning. And on the subject of Prop 37 in California, here's Dennis Kucinich explaining why it is so important during a speech he gave in front of Congress.
In 1992, the Food and Drug Administration decided that genetically modified organisms were the functional equivalent of conventional foods. They arrived at this decision without testing GMOs for allergenicity, toxicity, antibiotic resistance, and functional characteristics. As a result, hundreds of millions of acres of GMO crops were planted in America without the knowledge or consent of the American people. No safety testing, no long-term health studies. The FDA has received over a million comments from citizens demanding labeling of GMOs. 90% of Americans agree. So why no labeling? I'll give you one reason. The influence and the corruption of the political process by Monsanto. Monsanto's been a prime mover in GMO technology, a multi-million dollar GMO lobby here, and a major political contributor. There is a chance that Monsanto's grip will be broken in California, where a GMO labeling initiative is on the ballot. And here in Congress, my legislation, H.R. 3553, will provide for a national labeling bill. Americans have a right to know if their food is genetically engineered. It's time for labeling.
China versus Japan, shooting war, economic war, or war of words. This is out of the George Washington blog. The conflict between China and Japan over a small chain of disputed islands called Senkaku by Japan and Diu by China is fluid. Here are some of the key recent events in this dispute. Japan's ambassador to China died mysteriously, and China's police used tear gas and water cannons on anti-Japan protesters. A senior advisor to the Chinese government has called for an attack on the Japanese bond market to precipitate a funding crisis and bring the country to its knees. And then, of course, we had the Chinese hackers launching the hack attacks on Japanese government websites. We had the U.S. Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, saying that the conflict could represent a drift towards war. We had the top Chinese military general ordering his forces to, quote, prepare for combat. So massive escalation in tensions over the past week. And if you want a general overview of what's behind this China-Japan conflict, this is an excellent article to use as a starting point. And basically what it boils down to is this. China and Japan hate each other. Their citizens hate each other. They have for the past, 100 years or whatever, major massacres carried out by Japan in China, notably the Nanjing massacre killed 300,000 people. They hate each other's guts. They always have done. But both governments exploit this hatred amongst their population for their own political ends on a regular basis. And it appears as though a lot of these anti-Japanese protests in China, torching cars, Japanese-made cars, attacking Japanese restaurants, which are owned by Chinese people, that shows you how stupid these Mao placard-carrying demonstrators are, actually attacking businesses that are owned by Chinese people, just because it's like a Japanese sushi restaurant. The fact is, a lot of these riots have been directly provocateured and funded by the Chinese Communist Party. You've had whole groups of people who've been bussed in from Beijing to other cities to riot and cause all this havoc. China's basically putting on a show of posturing. I don't think for a second that it's ever likely to go to war over these tiny islands, certainly on China's behalf and also Japan. But what it is doing, it's testing the resolve of the United States alliance with Japan for future reference. I mean, China's holding all the cards here. They can crash the Japanese economy on a whim, as they've threatened to do this week. They can crash the US dollar. So the fact that these riots in China are being funded and organized by the Chinese government itself in many cases shows you that the communists are putting on a kind of geopolitical stage show and firing a warning shot diplomatically both to Japan and the United States. So while this situation, the immediate situation, will probably, peter out in the next few weeks, it will be looked back on in future as one of the opening salvos of what seems inevitable in a decade or two, which is what many people have talked about for years. The direct military confrontation between the US and China. Because remember, the US military industrial complex considers the economic rivalry of the BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, as itself an act of economic warfare and military warfare. So while this may continue to simmer locally with these islands over the short term, long term, it's going to explode into a huge regional war because the neocons, the PNAC people, the US military industrial complex will not tolerate China dominating the world. And they've already said in their own documents that they're willing to go to war to prevent that from happening. So this is just the first conflagration of a major regional war that's set to take place. Probably in the midterm future, unfortunately. But for the moment, expect this island dispute to peter out. Moving on now to the Middle East. Report, never an anti-American protest in Benghazi, only a planned attack. This is out of the Weekly Standard. CBS reports this morning that witnesses are saying that there was never an anti-American protest outside the consulate in Benghazi, Libya. Instead, they say it came under planned attack. That is in direct contradiction to the administration's account of the incident. What's clear, the CBS reporter concludes, is that the public won't get a detailed account of what happened until after the election. So this confirms what we've reported from the start, which is the attack on the US consulate in Benghazi was carried out by the same Libyan militants funded and backed by the Obama administration last year in overthrowing Colonel Gaddafi. It had nothing whatsoever to do with this ridiculous, puerile anti-Mohammed film. They call it a film. It's not even a film. Which was hyped, completely hyped, blown out of all proportion by the establishment media, by Western governments as part of this contrived clash of civilizations. So we have the US embassy in Pakistan today under siege. More riots, more demonstrations, Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, Indonesia. But I go back to what I said before. Where were the mass riots after a million Iraqis were killed? Where were the mass riots after the execution, public execution of Gaddafi with the regime change in Libya? You've got huge numbers of Muslims being manipulated into expressing outrage over a badly made 13-minute YouTube clip. Remember, it's not a film. No one's actually seen a full-length film. It's a 13-minute YouTube clip made by a convicted criminal, former US federal government informant, in which the actual insults towards Mohammed, which all these Muslims are getting up in arms about, were dubbed in after the fact. They were badly dubbed in after the whole thing had been filmed and put in the can. So all these Muslims laying siege to embassies across the Middle East, you know, Asia, North Africa, they either haven't actually seen the film, the shoddy YouTube clip, there's not even a film, or they're just stupid. A lot of them are being told, ordered by their clerics and their religious leaders and people like the leader of Hezbollah to go out and riot. And they haven't even seen the film. They don't even know what they're rioting about. They're just happy burning US flags. And it's a shame because they're being manipulated by the very same military-industrial complex system that probably, given the fact that it's put out all manner of dubious Al-Qaeda videos in the past, they probably were responsible for putting out this ridiculous YouTube clip. I mean, I could go on YouTube right now and, you know, find a dozen videos that are more offensive to Muslims than this pathetic film is, but you don't see anyone up in arms about them. Why? Because it's a contrived media creation. It's designed to provoke chaos, designed to further radicalize, and it's designed to grease the skids for further military intervention in the Middle East. And again, I'm not against protest, but why not protest something real instead of being manipulated into protesting a terribly made, badly dubbed YouTube clip that's put out by somebody linked to the US government? It makes no sense unless these people are being manipulated to do this, which is exactly what's happening from all the news, from all information that I've seen. Now we're going to go to David Ortiz to cover more of the news. David, over to you.
Thank you, Paul. For InfoWars Nightly News, I'm David Ortiz. Well, the Department of Justice this week released a lengthy and detailed report that focuses on the controversial Fast and Furious operation. According to a report released by the Inspector General, the Department of Justice's Inspector General, the report says Attorney General Eric Holder was not made aware of potential flaws in the program until February of last year. But the report cites 14 other department employees, including Criminal Division Head Lanny Brewer, for potentially wrongdoing, recommending the department consider disciplinary action against them. One congressional source told Fox News the report was, quote, more brutal than was expected. The report also marked Jason Weinstein, the Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division, as the highest-ranking DOJ employee in a position to stop the program. Weinstein, who disputes the findings, is resigning in the wake of the report. Now, another individual who was named in that report, who was also reprimanded in that report, was a gentleman by the name of Kenneth Melson, and Mr. Melson has also resigned as well. So that's two of the 14 people mentioned in the report who have decided to resign. But in short, Eric Holder seems to have been exonerated. Whether you believe that or not, that's what the report says. The report was about 500 pages in length. And it'll be interesting to see what penalties these 14 individuals are issued. So the debate will continue. Was the U.S. government trying to protect us from Mexican cartels? Or was this a very sly way to try to restrict our Second Amendment rights? Now, speaking of the Department of Justice, we're going to talk a little bit about a character who supposedly serves justice, and that's Judge Dredd. His movie is coming out this week. The character's movie is coming out this week, and Jakari Jackson wants to talk a little bit about it. But before we go over to Jakari, I want to make you aware of a spoiler alert. So, Jakari, over to you.
Judge Joseph Dredd has come to the screens once again, this time the adaptation simply titled Dredd. I'm Jakari Jackson for the InfoWars Nightly News. Let's analyze this trailer to find the fact behind the fiction of this new film. Spoiler alert.
You know how often we get a judge up in peace treaties?
Well, you got one now.
The Judge Dredd storyline takes place in 2070, after war has devastated the majority of the United States, leaving only a few large sections of land known as megacities inhabitable.
800 million people living in the ruin of the old world.
Megacities are full of cramped skyscrapers that house the city's population.
Agenda 21 highlights include the destruction of the family unit in the name of sustainable development, with people being forced to live in tight, compact cities and high-rise stack 'em and pack 'em apartments no bigger than this 16 by 16 foot space.
See any similarities? There we saw a drone patrolling the city skies. Now this is probably the least futuristic aspect of the entire trailer, mainly because there are drones patrolling the U.S. skies right now. It wasn't long ago that it was said that drones in the U.S. would be unarmed, but even relatively small law enforcement agencies have been able to secure them for their own purposes.
This one's even designed to carry weapons.
You have a stun baton where you can actually engage somebody.
Let's take a look now at a judge's uniform. Black, heavy armor, with a helmet that doubles as a mask. Back in 1977, when Judge Dredd first debuted, it was considered science fiction for police to dress like this. Now, in cities such as Colorado Springs, it's standard issue. Also, take note of a judge's lawgiver, a biometric firearm that can only be fired by its designated user, a modification that the New Jersey Institute of Technology has been developing for years. Now, it's important to point out that even though judges are charged with executing, quote, law, they are not police. Judges came into power at the end of the 21st century when they overthrew the U.S. Constitution. But I'm sure nothing like that could ever happen in our time.
And I've told my administration, we're going to look every single day to figure out what we can do without Congress. What can we do without it?
Do I think that our actions in any way violate the War Powers Resolution? The answer is no. So I don't even have to get to the constitutional question.
Now, I'm not saying that Carl Urban, the writer, the directors, or anybody else involved in this film is purposely pushing a police state agenda. I'm just saying that this film is a great example of what a police state can be. And as you've seen from this short video, we are not very far from it. Now, here's a good spoiler for all you fanboys out there. At the end of the film, Dredd kills the movie's villain, Mama, by throwing her from the top of a 200-story building.
The sentence was death.
Dredd has already been released in the UK and is set for release here in the States at the end of September. I'm Jakari Jackson for the InfoWars Nightly News.
I'm alone.
Thank you for that hard-hitting report, Jakari, and it's amazing listening to the comments of the president. The Constitution is actually something that gets in his way. There's also a video clip where the president says sometimes he wishes he could just bypass Congress, and his supporters, who supposedly love liberty, they condemned George Bush with the Patriot Act, were applauding when he said that, when he said sometimes Congress gets in the way and I wish I could just bypass them. A true police state, that is what we are experiencing, and stay tuned, continue following InfoWars, where we will continue to focus on the growing police state. Now, in other news, as if we didn't already know that Jerry Sandusky is a deeply, deeply disturbed human being, another individual is coming out and saying that Mr. Sandusky not only molested him, but oversaw a four-man child pedophile ring, which encompassed New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. According to Greg Bucciaroni, who is now 48 years old, he was introduced to Mr. Sandusky through Sandusky's Second Mile charity in Pennsylvania, and Mr. Bucciani describes himself as a child prostitute who was used by a pedophile ring, which included Sandusky, Phil Faglietta, who is now deceased Philadelphia businessman Ed Savitz, and former Wharton School of Business professor Lawrence Scott Ward. This is according to the New York Daily News. So he's saying that Mr. Sandusky not only molested him, but oversaw a four-man child pedophile ring. And he submitted a letter to authorities who are investigating a large-scale child molestation case at Poly Prep School in Brooklyn. Now, that case is eerily similar to what happened at Penn State. The Poly Prep administrators are investigating a gentleman who is now deceased by the name of Phil Faglietta. And according to this individual, he wrote to authorities investigating that case, quote, due to time constraints, Sandusky became unavailable, and I was introduced to Phil Faglietta by Ed Savitz and Jerry Sandusky. Faglietta was introduced to us as Coach Phil, who coach youth football in New York City. Faglietta agreed to pay $200 for child sex and followed us back to a Philadelphia hotel. Myself and another child prostitute then engaged Coach Phil in child sex. Obviously, these are graphic comments, and it's a shame that we have to talk about them, but we do expose bad people here. So, again, Mr. Sandusky not just accused of molesting another individual, but of overseeing a four-man child prostitution ring. And it's important that we keep our eyes on the case that's going on at Poly Prep in Brooklyn. Many individuals are outing another instructor there, and that was swept under the table by authorities for many, many years. Now, Alex has talked at great length about how child molestation is sadly not a rare occurrence. It's sadly something that occurs frequently among the elite. So he has stated that child molestation, the Penn State situation, is just scratching the surface. It is a very, very sad turn of events. And speaking about the moral decay of our country, there's a gentleman that we're going to talk about here at the Daily Quote of the Day that talked a little bit about the decline of our morality here. According to Aldous Huxley, this is what he had to say. Quote, armaments, universal debt, and planned obsolescence. Those are the three pillars of Western prosperity. Now, when we come back, we're going to go to an interview that I conducted with Michael Heiss, who is the national organizer of this weekend's End the Fed rally. We'll be back in a minute.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Welcome back. Well, right now I'm joined by Michael Heiss. Michael Heiss is the national organizer for this weekend's national End the Fed rally. It's taking place at many locations throughout the country. Now, obviously, last year, Alex participated in the event. He visited many locations, many Federal Reserve locations throughout Texas, and we obviously want this year's End the Fed rally to be even more popular and more boisterous. Michael Heiss is the national organizer. He is a local activist based out of the Philadelphia area. He focuses on many issues, among them chemtrails, ending the Fed, 9/11, Inside Truth. Michael, thank you so much for joining us tonight on InfoWars Nightly News.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Now, Michael, I've given the public a little bit of background information on as to who you are. Just let the public know a little bit more about yourself.
Well, basically, I started getting active in my local area about a year and a half ago when me and a couple of my friends finally crossed that Rubicon of, you know, we've been researching things for a long time. We have access to vital information. And it's time to take that responsibility to start doing, to start spreading that information. So it simply started out with me and two friends just getting cardboard boxes from outside of stores and spray painting InfoWars on the cardboard boxes and putting them around town. And Ron Paul 2012 and putting them around town and things like that. And basically I bought a bullhorn, and me and one friend went to the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia and just started bullhorning people across the street at the Constitution Center about the fact that the Fed was private and the money's not backed by anything and things like that. And I kept setting up these little rallies. And eventually, you know, like 60 people were there, and they came out from this group that I'm affiliated with called Truth, Freedom, Prosperity. And they've been doing it for a couple of years, so I just kind of teamed up with them, and I've been very active with them for the past year.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, Michael, it's exciting stuff because this Saturday, September the 22nd, there is a national End the Fed rally. Tell us a little bit more about that event.
Well, it's going on simultaneously in 23 major cities across the country. They're all going on at noon. It's not time sensitive or anything like that. So noon in the East Coast, noon in the West Coast.
Wonderful, wonderful. What do you hope to, just let the public know? What do you hope occurs as a result of this? You obviously want to end the Fed, but do you want Ron Paul's bill to pass the Senate?
Well, there's many different focuses. It is somewhat a grassroots push for the audit the Fed bill, but number one priority is to raise awareness and to get the information out to people and let people see that this is a movement and that it's not going anywhere. And I feel that in an era where Ron Paul is going to be leaving office, probably that these messages that he's sent out to us, the pursuit of liberty and everything that entails, that we need on the grassroots level to keep that up, because we don't have this torchbearer anymore. We need to not necessarily look for leaders, but maybe think about doing this ourselves.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, you're in the Philadelphia area. How many people do you estimate will attend, both in the Philadelphia area and nationally?
It's hard to say. I mean, we've been doing these for a while in the Philadelphia region. We've built up quite a reputation. So I expect several hundred in Philadelphia. Nationwide, somewhere in the thousands. It's really hard to say.
Understand. Now, Michael, aside from obviously protesting going on, what other events are going to be taking place at this rally? Will there be politicians attending? Will flyers be handed out? I understand that there's going to be several speakers speaking at this event.
Yep, I encourage each of the organizers in each city to do whatever they can to get the information out and how they see fit. So, you know, if you could bring out speakers, that'd be great, or a march. We'll be doing everything in Philadelphia. We have speakers, we have music, we'll be doing a march around City Hall, coming back to the Fed. There are some state politicians in some of these speeches going on, and I know North Carolina has a state politician. I believe Atlanta at least has somebody running for state.
Okay. Now, Michael, a $10 million question. In your estimation, why is it important to end the Fed?
So many answers for that one. They are the core problem to our country. Every problem that we have is funded through the Federal Reserve, and it serves to help the people at the top of the pyramid, you know, from the trickle-down effect of inflation, where they get the money before the market reacts to it, so they pay lower prices. Meanwhile, the working man is stiffed and pays higher prices. So the hidden tax of inflation that's raising all the prices, that's a very serious blow, and it seems like there's no end in sight with the announcement of QE3, and that's going on with building bubbles and the student debt bubble, the credit bubble, the derivatives bubble, spending patterns that are out of control and nothing's being done about them, you know, over $1 trillion a year deficit spending, plus the announcement of this $40 billion a month in QE3, it's just we're losing all of our wealth. We're losing our ability to be middle class at all. The wealth gap is getting out of control. And that's originally what really ignited me, because I felt that my future had been sold out from under me. You know, it was looking like, you know, I can get a job doing some kind of consumer job, you know, a register or something like that, or I can go to college, get 50, 60 grand and have no guarantee of a job afterward, because through regulation and inflation, they've chased all the jobs away.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, Michael, what are your thoughts on the fact that the Republicans have introduced auditing the Fed and returning to the gold standard into their platform?
Well, an audit of the Fed would be good. That would be the ultimate way to raise awareness of the Fed and show just how devious they are and how much money they are printing. You know, with that partial audit, $16 trillion, a lot of which going to foreign banks. if that's not that, I mean, that should be bad enough, but it wasn't. So this could be the ultimate light shined on them, and maybe where we the people can render them irrelevant through our actions. In terms of going back to a gold standard, I mean, it's better to, I mean, obviously competition in any marketplace is better. So it's a step in the right direction. Ultimately, I kind of reject the idea of central control over our money at all. So I'm an advocate of local currencies and individual freedom at the highest level.
Now, Michael, what type of media attention do these rallies usually receive from the, first of all, just media attention period, but then also from the mainstream media? What type of feedback do you get from the media when in relation to last year's rally and this upcoming rally?
In Philly, I have never seen any kind of media response. I've never seen media coverage. I mean, you know how it is. They don't want to cover these issues. It doesn't serve their interest to cover these issues, and to be fair, so I've never really seen any kind of media response. I haven't gotten contacted by anybody in any mainstream media as far as covering this event.
What type of advancement has the End the Fed movement made?
Oh, I think it's grown by leaps and bounds. I mean, and obviously a lot of it has been championed by Ron Paul. You know, we weren't talking about these issues. It wasn't the Fed wasn't even necessarily a name that you might know what it means 5 years ago, before Ron Paul was talking about it in the debates and getting on mainstream media and giving a voice. Through Ron Paul, it's becoming very widespread information, and now that his era in politics is over, we have to take that information and spread it ourselves. And that's what I think is the interesting turn here. If you look at, you know, social media, I think End the Fed might even be trending on Twitter right now. It's being spread at a grassroots level, and it's just now it's up to we the people and other people's receptiveness and how effective we are at spreading that message. But in terms of has it grown, yes, I would say it definitely has.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, is this event going to be streamed online?
Yeah, many of the locations are going to have live streams. Not all of them, but I think there's about 12 of them at least that are going to have live streams. You can go to the event page on Facebook to see them, or if anybody's familiar with RTR.org or Restore the Republic, Reality Report with Gary Franchi, they're going to be sponsoring, well, not sponsoring, they're going to be hosting all of the live streams. So you can go there and they will keep up with the action throughout the country throughout the day, or you can just pick the individual live streams there.
Two more questions in closing. You mentioned RTR.org. Tell us a little bit about that website, because it seems to be a place where patriots can talk.
Yeah, it's a social, I mean, they have a news aspect to it, like such as, like I mentioned, Reality Report with Gary Franchi, but it's a social media network for, aimed particularly at patriots. So whether it's people for in the liberty movement, people in the truth movement, which we really need to join together and be the truth and liberty movement anyway. It's a place to come together, much like Planet InfoWars, for people to come together, talk and communicate, and to form ideas on grassroots actions.
Absolutely, and you mentioned PlanetInfoWars.com as well. Thank you for that. Michael, is there any last statement you want to leave with the viewers here? Is there any last thing you'd like to say to them regarding this upcoming event, which, again, is taking place this Saturday nationwide?
Yeah, just do anything you can to spread the word. I mean, something as simple as a tweet or a Facebook, sharing the Facebook event page. You know, we really do want to make this as big event as possible. The idea was to have the biggest movement against central banking since the days of Andrew Jackson. And now the QE3 has been announced, and the more they do this, the more inflation they inflict upon us, the more relevant our message is becoming. So it's important that we really take this seriously and spread the message so that people can become aware and start to phase them out through our free market actions.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for your time. This is an issue that many people are talking a lot about on our social network, PlanetInfoWars.com. We wish you the best of luck this upcoming weekend, and let's hope that viewers attend.
Thank you, and the Fed.
Thank you, Michael. And as I stated earlier, I will be covering the End the Fed rally from San Antonio this weekend, so be sure to watch that news piece early next week. And if you want to find like-minded people who are also going to be attending the End the Fed rally, at an area near you, be sure to log on to planetinfowars.com. You can find some like-minded individuals who will be attending the event. Obviously, the larger the number, the harder it will be for the corporate whore media to not cover the event. So planetinfowars.com. And if you want to continue supporting this operation, become a member of PrisonPlanet.tv. It's less than $6 a month. You're going to get access to a lot of great programming, documentaries in HD. You'll be able to see Alex's show live. I am a member of PrisonPlanet.tv, and I was a member before I got here. I was addicted to the website, so I can vouch for it. It is a great, great website. Well, that's all for us this evening. We'll see you tomorrow.